it's maintained. But it has to be done in the right mentality, as the Bhagavatam points out. Like that. So therefore, then, the proper relationships between the members of the community is established. And then everything works very nicely. Then it works nicely. But if it's not, if it's done out of pride and all those qualities that it mentioned, that, then even you're seemingly following Varnashram, but if you're doing it with those, you know, the non-Vedic mentality, then it still will create a problem. Because then, you know, the different positions and all that, and money and manpower, all that will be used, you know, for political or other kinds of ways. You know, political meaning outside of the normal Varnashram activity. You know, politics will be there, but it's not within, it's not pious. Like that. So, whatever, it's an offering to Krishna. So even if something is done in passion or ignorance, if it's offered to Krishna, then that's the perfection of that activity. But that does not mean that that itself is the most perfect activity. Right? An action performed in passion, done for the in passion, is imperfect. But the best application of that is that passion is then used in Krishna's service. So it's the perfection of that passion. But it doesn't mean that that activity performed in passion is the perfect activity. That's the thing. You understand?
And so both should go together.
That's best. It's just like, let's say, you know, you don't have, you know, you go outside and, you know, you find a potato and it's, you know, half rotten and, you know, somebody just stepped on it, but that's all you got. So you wash it off and clean it up, you know, and half of it you can cook and offer to Krishna. Okay, that's the perfection of that potato, you know, is that it's been used in the Lord's service. But that's not the most perfect offering you could have made. You know what I'm saying? So as a beginning, fine, that's great. But after a while, you can't just go on and just, when it comes time for an offering, then you just go out and look for some rotten potatoes. Well, that's what I used, you know, 5 years ago. So, I mean, what's the problem, you know? I mean, when Prabhupada was here, we used to offer rotten. We used to go out into the cemeteries and steal the flowers. So what's the problem? Right? Yes. But you have to take what's the essence. What was going on when Prabhupada was here? Things were being offered to Krishna. Our endeavors were being given to Krishna. We were trying to give whatever is the best we had for Krishna. So because we were Yahoo hippies, therefore we went into cemeteries and stole the flowers. You know? Okay, so that's perfection of hippiedom. Right? But that doesn't mean hippiedom is the perfection of offerings to the Lord. Now let us consider how the words nitya, eternal, and naimittika, temporary, used here with the word karma. If we consider the deep meaning of the scriptures, we will see that these two words do not refer to the supreme spiritual goal of life. The terms are used with ordinary or material meaning. Words like nitya karma, nitya tattva, and nitya sattva may be applied only to the soul's pure spiritual position. They cannot be used to refer to anything else. Therefore, when the word nitya is used to modify the word karma, that nitya karma, seemingly of the material world, indirectly refers to the eternal spiritual reality. The karma of the material world is never eternal. When karma is employed in karma yoga leads to the search for jnana, knowledge, and that search leads to bhakti, devotional service. Then that karma and jnana may be called nitya, because they lead to something that is actually nitya. Therefore, a brahmana's chanting of the Gayatri Mantra is called a nitya karma, because even though it is an activity in relation to the material body, does have an oblique reference to the path of devotional service. Therefore, these things may be called nitya, even though in themselves they are not really nitya. Such a usage is called upachar, a figure of speech. The word nitya karma can be applied truthfully only to Krishna prema, pure love for Krishna. The word nitya karma can be applied truthfully only to the realm of spirit. When the activities of this material world are used for advancement in spiritual life, those activities may be called nitya karma. There is no wrong in that with that usage. However, one who sees the truth does not call these activities nitya, eternal. He prefers to call them naimittika, temporary. It is not really true that the words nitya karma and naimittika karma may refer to It is not really true that the words nitya karma and naimittika karma may refer to materialistic activities. In truth, the eternal nature of the soul is purely spiritual. The religion that describes the pure soul is the real eternal religion. All other religions are temporary. Vaishnava Dharma, Astanga Yoga, Shankhya, and austerities are all temporary. If an individual spirit soul is not bound by Maya, there is no need for him to follow any of these paths. These temporary religions are meant only for souls bewildered by Maya. All these religions are intended for certain specific circumstances. Therefore, the truth is they are all temporary. The Brahmins are the best of the social classes. The Brahmin's duty is to chant the Gayatri Mantra, and the sannyasi's duty is to renounce other duties. However, all these duties are temporary. All these duties are praised by the Dharma Shastras, and they are good for some spiritual aspirants. Still, they are not in any way equal to the eternal duties of the soul. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.10 explains, Viprad dvishat guna yutta aravindanabha padaravinda vimuktat svapacham varishtam manye tarapita mano vachane hitarta pranam punanti sakulam natu bhurimana. The Brahman has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord. He is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words and activities, wealth and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahman, because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called Brahman in a position of false prestige cannot purify even himself. The 12 Brahminical qualifications here are 1. Truthfulness. 2. Self-control. 3. Austerity. 4. Freedom from envy. 5. Modesty. 6. Tolerance. 7. Freedom from malice. 8. Sacrifice. 9. Charity. 10. Steadiness. 11. Hearing the Vedas. And 12. Observing vows. Brahmana who possesses these 12 qualities should be honored by everyone in the world. However, if a Brahman has all these qualities but has no devotion for Lord Krishna, then that Brahmana is degraded. Even a devotee who is a dog eater is better than such a Brahmana. The meaning here is that the dog eater referred to is a person who has taken birth in a dog eater family, but by association with saintly persons becomes purified, samskara, and because of that purification engages in the eternal spiritual activities of the soul. The Brahmana referred to here is a person who has taken birth in a Brahmana family, but is adverse to the eternal activities of the soul, and prefers to perform temporary material activities in their stead. Such a dog eater is better. Human beings in this material world are of two kinds, 1. The intelligent, and 2. The unintelligent. The material world is filled with unintelligent human beings. Intelligent human beings are rare. Among such unintelligent persons, the Brahmins are the best. And thus the duties of the Brahmins, such as their chanting of Gayatri Mantra, are the best of these kinds of duties. intelligent person. Oh no, this is amongst unintelligent. Okay, here we go. Among such unintelligent persons, the Brahmins are the best, and thus the duties of Brahmins, such as their chanting of Gayatri Mantra, are the best of these kinds of duties. Intelligent person is a synonym for the word Vaishnava. The activities of the Vaishnavas and the activities of unintelligent persons are inevitably very different. However, the teaching of the Vaishnavas and the teachings of the unintelligent followers of the Smriti Shastras, the so-called Smartas, are not really opposed to each other. The teachings of the scriptures are always in harmony with each other. Intelligent persons accept the scriptures as their friends. They do not think that the different duties prescribed in the scriptures have different purposes in the end. The duties prescribed in the scriptures for unqualified persons are indeed different from the duties prescribed for the intelligent. Still, these different activities have the same purpose at their root. For the unintelligent, the scriptures prescribe temporary duties as most appropriate. However, temporary duties are all imperfect, horrible, contaminated, and short-lived. These temporary duties are not the same as direct spiritual duties. Temporary duties may be accepted when they follow the spiritual path. Then they help one to obtain the spiritual nature. When the means does not lead to the goal, the means should be rejected. Therefore, the means is not complete in itself. It is merely a part, a separated fragment of what will be the final goal. Therefore, temporary duties are not complete. For example, a Brahmin is chanting Gayatri, like his other duties as well, is subjected to various rules and is meant to be performed only at certain specific times. All these duties are not manifested from the soul's natural spiritual activities. However, after many days of following such rules, a person may become purified by associating with saintly Vaishnavas. Then he develops a liking for the spiritual holy name of Lord Hari. At that time, he does not continue other activities such as the chanting of the Gayatri. Chanting the holy name of Lord Hari is the perfect spiritual activity. The chanting of Gayatri and other like activities are only various means to obtain the goal, which is the chanting of Lord Hari's holy name. Therefore, these activities are not the final perfection. Saintly persons teach that these temporary duties, while horrible in themselves, are still imperfect, horrible, contaminated, and short-lived. The spiritual truth is the final goal, because they bring one into contact with matter and materialists. Temporary duties are horrible for the individual souls. Temporary duties are very material. Temporary duties bring with them many irrelevant results. The individual soul naturally attains these results. Even though he does not wish these petty results, he cannot escape them. For example, that a Brahmin worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead is good. However, a Brahmin tends to think, I am a Brahmana. Other souls are inferior to me. Such a falsely proud Brahmana finds that his worship of the Lord brings a horrible result. Mystic powers obtained by practicing Astanga Yoga also bring horrible results. They are very inauspicious for the individual souls. Material sense gratification and impersonal liberation are the two unavoidable friends of temporary duties. Only if he can cheat these two will the individual soul attain his root spiritual nature. Therefore, temporary duties are very horrible for the individual soul. Temporary duties are short-lived. The soul's temporary duties are not performed in all situations and all times. For example, a Brahmana's Brahmana nature, a Kshatriya's Kshatriya nature, and other like natures also are manifested because of a particular cause. When the cause ceases to be, these natures vanish. A person may in one birth be a Brahmana, and in the next birth an outcast. Therefore, the duties of the Brahmana caste are temporary. They are not the original duties of the soul. Therefore, in reference to temporary duties, the phrase own duty is only a figure of speech. That is why in every birth a soul's own duty changes. However, in none of these births does the soul's eternal duty ever change. This eternal duty is the soul's true own duty. Temporary duties are all short-lived. So here now we see he's coming up the other side. Is that he started with explaining the difference between the transcendental activities and the material activities. And then he got into describing the material activities so that we could understand it very fully. So after describing, now he's pointing out that when it says nitya, means that there's two kinds of activities, nitya and naimittic, or regular and temporary, that actually the term nitya can't be referring to material activities. So since they are referring to these activities that we would call temporary, then it means that these activities must be engaged in the Lord's service. They must be part of the program for elevating us to pure devotional service. So that's the actual purpose of them. So all the duties of the brahmana, all these other duties that are supposed to be done on a regular basis, they're done for the purification of the living entity, and not otherwise. Because otherwise, the things themselves are temporary. When this life, a particular group of temporary activities is to be performed on a regular basis. But in the next life, it may be a totally different set, depending upon the conditioned nature. Therefore, they are not actually nitya. So the karma is there, yes, but the nitya means that it's engaged in the Lord's service. So technically speaking, in a hidden way, it's meaning this means karma yoga, or nishkam karma yoga, sakam karma yoga, like that. It's meaning that the activity is supposed to be done for the Lord's pleasure. This is what Krishna is giving in the Gita. Because the Vedas are giving all these things, and then the Gita means then the Upanishads are the philosophical conclusions of the Vedas. But the essence of that is in the Gita. And then Krishna in the Gita is saying that all these duties should be given up as material karma, and they should only be performed as duties to attain Krishna. Right? So there's a difference. It looks the same. Someone is performing the duties, but for the material benefits, either for sense gratification or liberation. Right? Because artha is thrown in, right? It means you need the artha for the sense gratification. They only want the money for the sense gratification, the facilities for the sense gratification. So the goal is sense gratification, or going the other way, liberation. These are the two things that they want from performing dharma. But the Vaishnavas, they don't do this. They perform dharma for attaining Krishna, bhakti. So it's a different category. Because these other things, the karma and jnana, are simply meant to get one to bhakti. The activities purify one, that brings knowledge. And that knowledge then one should be using to understand Krishna. Like that. So that's the actual purpose of karma and jnana, not something else. But the materialists, they are very happy with their temporary natures, so they take it up. Therefore, someone who is born in a low-class family, if they are a devotee of Krishna, that is better than someone born in a very high-class family with all good qualities, but is not a devotee of the Lord. That is being pointed out here. Like that. And he's mentioning that these terms, there's all these terms that are there, they're hidden terms. So the materialists will take them in a material way, like here, own duty. Like he was playing nitya karma. So they take nitya to be, you know, that it's always done. But it still is a temporary duty. It's dealing with the temporary body and the temporary subtle body. And it's only in this life. Next life it'll change. So you can't really call it nitya. But for them it sounds good. Nitya. We are always doing it. Like that. You know, it gives them a good sense of feeling. But for the devotees, then it takes a different meaning. Nitya means that it should be done to please the Lord. So because it's touched the Lord, it becomes spiritualized. That's the nitya. Like that. So here, own duty. So they take an own duty. Yes, I'm born in this family, so I have my duties. But this body is not us. So therefore, the own duty of the soul is service to Krishna. That's the only thing that's nitya. It doesn't change. Therefore, own duty means you should engage your conditioned nature in the Lord's service to come to the platform of one's pure spiritual identity and service. So that's the hidden meanings behind, right? So here we see he's explained the difference in a very nice way, then gone into it, into understanding what is dharma, And then he brings it back up to understanding how it connects to the Lord. So that's up to now. Now the next is he'll describe the duties of the Vaishnavas. Because the question was, why is it the Vaishnavas do something different? They don't seem to follow. He's pointed out is that the scriptures give for the Vaishnavas, you know, the pure Vaishnavas, they give duties for those who are conditioned, and they give those who are conditioned but not interested in the Lord. They're actually meant for the coming to the top platform, but they misuse them. Like that. So it seems there's difference, but there's no difference. The conclusions are always the same. The scriptures are trying to get one to the transcendental platform, the pure transcendental platform in service to the Lord. But one can take them and use them otherwise. So the details change if you're using them otherwise. But if you're not, if you're listening for Krishna, then it doesn't matter. You should always be chanting the Lord's name. Right? That's nitya. So at least then you should be chanting the name sometime, but in with the purpose of pure devotion. And even if not, then at least as a Brahman, you should be chanting the Gayatri, which has the Lord's names in it, then on a regular basis, you know, three times a day, a certain amount of time every day. And then from that, you'll become purified. Then you may want to know what's going on. Who is the Lord? What is actually happening here? Then you may come to the point of chanting the Lord's name for chanting the Lord's name, not just because the Shastras say chant this mantra. Then from there, that will become the prominent thing. Then one will start chanting 24 hours a day. Then we're starting to talk about nitya. So that's the purpose, is that nitya chanting is supposed to bring you to the actual Vaishnava platform of nitya, which means always chanting the Lord's glories. Any questions on this?
For example, if one living entity in one life is a Brahman and in other life is a Kshatriya and he performs his Kshatriya or Brahma duties in connection with the Lord, and this Naimittika duties become in both cases Nitya.
Yeah. Means if you're taking material activities, if you're taking the Vaishnav definition, Naimittika means just material activities because they're temporary. See, there they're taking this life as something very important and wonderful. Therefore, this life is very long. Therefore, the activities done in this life are nitya. But if you step back, then this life is actually not very long, and it'll be changing one after another, unlimited times. So they're all naimittika, right? Because naimittik means something you do occasionally. So occasionally you're a Brahmin, occasionally you're a Kshatriya, occasionally you're a dog eater, occasionally you know so many things. So therefore, it's the whole material world is naimitta, like that, temporary, occasionally done. So that's the point here. But I mean, that's the on the one side the point. The other side is that if it's done to please the Lord, then it becomes nitya, even though it may be material and temporary because it's in connection with the Lord, right? Then you take this lamp. It's made out of brass. It's a material elements. And it's sitting in a shop somewhere, and somebody may take it home and put it on their coffee table, right? You know, some decoration, you know, some Indian, you know, art like that. So then it maintains its materiality. But you take it and then you put it in the Lord's temple and use it for pleasing the Lord, then it becomes spiritualized. So in this way it becomes nitya. Right, because it's engaged, dovetailed. Prabhupada uses the word dovetailed. So that's the whole idea, is if it's dovetailed in the Lord's service, that material thing becomes spiritualized and a source of our spiritual purification and advancement. Right? And that brings one closer to Krishna. But if one does not dovetail the same thing, used in the same way, then it will take you away from Krishna into the material world. So this is the difference between religion and eternal religion. Sanatan Dharma and Sanatan Dharma is simply how you use it. It's not that it necessarily changes. Some details may change, but the principle never changes. Right? Therefore, the rules of all these things, the smartest, this and that, we have basically the same rules. Right? But they follow it for temporary achievements, but we follow it for eternal achievements. Right? Therefore, these things don't have the same meaning or weight as it does for smarta. Because the material result will give the material result. Material activity will give the material result. And that's what they want. Well, the Vaishnavas don't want it. They just want to engage their nature because they have to do something. So they engage it, and then that is used in Krishna's service. Right? Either the activity itself, the results, or both. Right? So then, it's secondary to the service to the Lord. While for the materialist, it's primary. For the smartest, it's primary. That is their means to achieve their goal. But for us, it's the engaging in the Lord's service. That's the thing, so that we can get pure devotion. Right? So they're also a means, but not for getting the material results that they give. That'll come on the side. Right? That's why if you perform pious activities, economic development will happen. Therefore, you don't have to worry about it. Brahman does their duty, Kshatriya does their duty. You don't have to worry about economic development. It will be there. It'll come automatically. Whatever you're supposed to get, it'll just automatically come. Right? So, therefore, one doesn't have to worry for that. One has to worry, am I engaging it in the Lord's service? Right? That's what one has to see. You know? That doesn't mean one's... Generally, that'll take it, well, then I don't have to do anything. No, you have to do your duty. If you have a business nature, you must run a business. But you're not running the business to get rich. You're running the business because as a Vaishya, you're supposed to run a business. So as a Vaishya, you do your best to run your business. But you're doing that because Krishna says you're supposed to do it. Not for the economic development. It's just a very different mentality. And the results that come are Krishna's. Right? We're Krishna's, family's Krishna's, everything's Krishna's. Therefore, when the money comes, we have to see that it's properly engaged in Krishna's service. So this house belongs to Krishna, we have to take care of the house. Right? As a Vaishya, you have to live in some house. You know, you have your wife, have family, have so many things. Like that, as a businessman, you have to have that. So we have to maintain it because it belongs to Krishna. But it's not just saying these things just to say that so I can take... No, you don't like that. But also, because this money belongs to Krishna, it's also supposed to be given in charity for other things. So that must also be done. Not that, oh, this house is Krishna, so therefore I'm making fancier and fancier house. You know, and then enjoying it. No, according to your nature, you're living at that standard. So then it's a fine point. It takes some proper intelligence to understand this. So, but it's not being done for the artha, because artha is for kama. Right? So when devotees are feeling that, well, I've done so much service, why things aren't going nice, why I have no facility, well, what's that facility for? Why are you worried about facility? Why are you worried about these? Then what's going to happen? What do you do with those things? Right? Because liberation doesn't require those. Right? Devotional service doesn't require. Right? The bhakti itself doesn't require. The bhakti is the offering. Is the mentality. So then, what does that leave? You've cut out bhakti, you've cut out moksha, you've cut out, you know, dharma, because you're not doing it just because it's for dharma's sake, right? And then you're saying you need the artha, but need it for what? What's the last option? Right? Kama. There is not another option. You can't make up another option. We're Westerners, we have some new option. Right? In India there's five elements, but in the West there's six. Right? In India fire burns, but in America it doesn't. Right? In India water's wet, but in America it's not. Huh? Yeah, well, that's another. Yeah, it's fire over there, isn't it? So, you know, and like that, you know, air is something else, you know, ether is something else. Right? You measure out 10 feet in India, it's got one amount of space, but in America you measure out 10 feet, it's something totally different. You know, everything's exactly the same. Just people's desires are different, that's all. But otherwise, material energy is exactly the same as it was a million years ago. It's still the same, it's the same here, it's the same as over there. Same elements, same everything. Nothing changed. Just our desire is different, how we look at it. This is good, this is not good. Right? That's all. So, and because we consider ourselves very important, therefore, then that's more important than, you know, God's idea. You know, but so that's how we get ourselves in these. So that's why it says, even a Brahmin with all good qualities, he's very moral, very upstanding, speaks truth, but what's the use if he's not a devotee? Right? Someone from not such a good background, who is humble and feels that they are very fallen and all that, and is a devotee of the Lord, that's better. You know? So therefore, we can imagine what is the position of we are dog eaters and proud of it. Right? You understand? It's taking actually qualified Brahmin, but not a devotee, useless. Low-born person, but humble, and understanding that they're fallen and, you know, they take shelter of the Lord. And what about fallen person who is proud? That their, you know, their dog-eating culture is the best. Not very good. So, it's not even an option given here. Right? So therefore, one has to be very, one just has to see how it works, you know, like that. But the point is that it has to be applied. Intelligence has to be used. That is there. So due to the temporary manifestation of things, you may have to apply things in different way at different times, but the principle doesn't change. It's like business is business. It doesn't matter where in the world you're doing or what you're dealing in, business is still business. But according to what you're selling, the place you're selling it, you know, and who you're selling it to, you may make some detailed differences. You understand? There may be some detailed difference. Like these people are poor, so I can't sell expensive things, so I'll sell cheap things. And I'll sell millions of them. And I'll make a small amount of profit, small margin, and in this way I'll become rich. Or in another situation, I may be able to sell something very expensive, and in selling a few things, I'll be able to make the same amount of money. That's a detail. But the principle is that I got some, acquired something for cheaper than I sell it for. That can't change. Otherwise, it's not business. But the detail is there. So that's not a big deal. You just adjust according to the thing. That's called a good businessman. So the same way is if we understand that this dharma is simply to be used in Krishna's service, that makes it Sanatana Dharma. Then according to time, place, and circumstance, we adjust it. But the dharma itself, the principles, are not compromised because these principles are rooted in devotional service. Right? There's some purpose to it. Right? You can't respect your mother or father. How are you going to respect God? Right? If you can't respect someone so obvious and close, how are you going to respect someone you don't see? Respect mother and father. You can't respect any authority. So you're not going to be able to respect a teacher. You're not going to be able to respect an administrative authority. You know, you're not going to respect anybody. So this idea is, you know, I'm on my own, I don't respect, means you respect nobody, including God. We may say, but saying is one thing and doing is another. So the principle of respecting authority cannot be broken. Why? Because the point is God's the ultimate respectable authority. Right? You understand? And even we say, okay, well, that's Vaidhi. You know, we're Brajavasis. We don't respect God as God. Okay, but we respect Him as the most wonderful person. Right? But that respect is in an informal way. Because respect means you are sensitive and notice what the other person has, some qualities in that, and you appreciate it. Right? Appreciation, when it's formalized, is respect. It can also be informal. Right? Just like we may have respect for the parents, but it may be, you can informalize it. But if in that being informal, you are not respectful, you lose that gratitude, and it just becomes familiarity. No one will agree that's good. But if it can be informal and that respect remains, then it's called intimate. So that appreciation for the other person must remain. Right? Because if you're not appreciating, how are you going to be attracted? Right? And if you're not attracted, you can't become attached. Right? And if you're not attached, you won't do anything. So even on the platform of rag, still the same principle is there, but in its most pure form. You know? So we see that it's the same thing, but as it comes from rag into vaidhi in the spiritual world, it changes its flavor. Principle doesn't change. Then when it goes from the spiritual into the material world, it seems to change again, but it's still the same principle. So we have to understand, as the scriptures are there, as it mentions, our best friend. Because they teach us all these different things so we can start to understand what is going on. And with that knowledge, then we can, Krishna says in the Gita, that one cuts this maya with this knowledge. That's what the knowledge is for. So that's the sword. So then, that's the principle. Does that make sense? Anything else? Yes.
It's not very much, but simple question.
A little louder, please.
This simple question, I did not get the right logical answer for why it's good to be good. How you can exploit the children or parents. Is there some different ways for you to be
good? Why it's good to be good?
Yeah.
Because if you're good, you get a good result, and if you're bad, you get a bad result.
Like, why you should not do something what is not good? Why you have to respect people, the teachers, or parents, or family?
Well, means you just tell them. It's just, do you like it when people ignore you or don't deal with you properly? You just ask them. You don't like? No, you don't like. So then, why should anyone else like? If you deal like that with others, that's how you're going to get dealt with. It's just the way it is. That's the result. You do any activity, it gets a result. That you don't really have to explain much. Just like, do you ever have to explain to children what's a mother or father, or what's a husband and a wife? Never. Because the soul has done it in every birth. So that you don't have to explain. You may have to explain, you know, what are the technical rituals and this and that, because that changes from birth to birth. That you have a mother, a father, people get married and they have, you know, families, you don't have to explain that. It's just they understand. So the whole point is, you do something, you get a result. That they know. Kid knows they scream and yell, they get some attention, you know, good, bad, or otherwise. So they can understand that. So you just have to explain, you just have to point it out. That you do like this, you can do. You're free to do, you get this bad result. You never notice people don't like, they say this and that. So if you like that, if that's how you want to go through your whole life, people, you know, looking bad at you and making faces, then fine, you can do it. But it would be much easier to just to behave properly and everybody would like you. I mean, you can be very straight, but it has to be just very simple. Children like things very pointed out to them. Generally adults don't, because they figure they can't understand. But they're very sensitive. But it just has to be very simple. Just like, you know, it's like they may be stupid, but they're not insensitive. Right? Like that. To the basic principles of, you know, animal life. Like, animals are very sensitive. They can tell whether you're friendly or not. You know? So it's, you know, so many things they can tell. Same way the kids are the same. So generally we tend to think they'll not understand. They can understand. It's just we have to explain it to them just in a language that they will grasp. So if you get down to the principle, they can understand that. It's just the unlimited details that they can't. That'll take time. Because that takes intelligence. You know, to understand technical points. But the principles are actually quite easy for them.
Some karmic people, for example, they can say that I was cheating for many years and I still did not get any better results, so I'm going to continue like that, and I'm fine. And I don't believe in some
eternal
life or something.
Yeah, great. Go for it. Why not? Like that. And later on, we'll find out who's right. That's what Prabhupada told that professor in Russia. He said, you know, I don't believe in all this and that and all that. And Prabhupada said, okay, the time of death, we'll find out who's right. You know, me or you. You know? So go ahead. You do your thing, I'll do mine. And at death, we'll find out who's right. Because the point is, as soon as it's all right to do something, it loses its interest. It's only fun as long as you're not supposed to do it. As soon as someone says, yeah, you do it, why not? But you do it, but I don't want to do it because it's stupid. You know? Like that. You don't have to say it like that, but it's, they basically understand it like that. Yeah, go ahead, go for it. Why not? You know? But you'll get you'll reap the results. People won't like you, this, that. Okay, maybe a few weird people will like you. If that's what you want to go through life, but those few weird people aren't running the world. There are other people that are running this world. And like it or not, but, you know, they have more control than you do. So, you know, you want to behave badly, great, yeah. Police will come along, catch you, and put you in jail. You know, and then you can sit there behind bars and yell and scream all you like that you don't accept their authority and don't like what they do and think that they're weird. Fine.
But, I don't believe.
You know, yeah, you can... It's the way it is. So you can do it. Why not? You know. So it may be hard for them, but you know, that's so, you know. And those who are a little bit intelligent will catch it. Those who are clever. You know. Or, you know, if there's any touch of little bit of piety, then, but if they're not, then they won't. What can you do? You know. And you can. Yeah.
His emphasis is on chanting the holy name, and through chanting we become qualified to chant the Gayatri Mantra. And then we hear there are those who chant the Gayatri Mantra to qualify themselves to chant the holy name. Could you speak a little more on that?
Here you're talking about someone who, by their previous activities, has the material pious qualifications, that they're already on a very high pious level. So by their chanting of the Gayatri, then they become further purified, where then they understand to take up the chanting of the holy names. Now the holy name is independent. So for someone who's unqualified, the Gayatri Mantra and these won't work. So then by chanting, then they become purified. And the Vaishnava automatically contains the Brahminical, you know, nature. So then those things come up. But the Brahminical nature is still the lower nature. So from chanting the holy name, that comes up, and that helps keep us on that platform. It's not that the Brahman who's qualified when they become a devotee give up chanting the Gayatri. It means as long as they're conditioned, then these rules apply. When they become liberated, then if they want to chant or not, that's up to them. Because they're going to be chanting the holy name anyway, you know, 24 hours a day, so they don't really have they may not find the time to chant Gayatri. Like that. But for someone who by the holy name were purified, it brings it to the Brahminical platform. It's still advantageous then to chant Gayatri. The only difference is that they start off qualified to chant, right? And we don't, right? And at the same time, is the holy name is the constant factor all the way through. Right? This means we're chanting, and then by chanting, we come to the stage where one can chant Gayatri. And then with that combination, then we continue to go on. Right? So the Gayatri is purifying the conditioned nature. The holy name is also doing that. But the Gayatri and the regulations that go along with this keep us from falling down into modes of passion and ignorance. Right? Because we won't chant all day. Right? We won't chant Gayatri all day. But to chant Gayatri, then there's so many other things to go along with it. You have to be clean, so that means then you got to clean your house, clean your clothes, clean yourself, clean everything. So that tends to keep us busy. So then the nature is there. So it's an assistant. Right? You can just chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day and then not worry about these things. But the tendency is we won't, so we have to fill up that time. So then that time is filled with all these other rules and regulations.
I'm just wondering, why don't they also start off with chanting the holy name? Because they're qualified, they can chant the Gayatri, but why do they have to
Because they haven't heard about it. If they're born in the family of devotees, then they'll have heard about it. It means if you have a Brahminical family who has become devotees, and they have a child, then the child will grow up with both. Like that. But if they haven't, then they'll come in contact with the holy name. They've already been chanting the Gayatri, so that just continues. And we haven't come in contact, but we're not chanting. But by the chanting, it purifies to the point where that can come. Here they're just talking about Brahma Gayatri, like that, because that's Vedic. The Pancharatrik then is more specific, because that's directly has the Vaishnav nature to it. The Brahma Gayatri is there, but it's hidden. Is hidden. You can understand it that way, but you can also not understand it that way. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Anything else on this? Yes.
You said that if we don't have respect for our parents, then how we can have respect for the God? But for instance, in the case, if we felt often ashamed of our parents because of certain things, maybe they didn't care very nicely of you or something like this, then it's a little bit difficult to have this deep feeling of respect. So I don't know how to deal with this.
Yeah. So then how do you do with temple authorities? Are they taken care of nicely, or you're a little embarrassed that they're not quite up to the mark?
Well, I cannot say that I was satisfied.
Huh?
I cannot say that I was satisfied.
Okay. Yeah. And then, guru?
Every topic.
Huh?
Every topic.
Okay. And then, what's the next point? So is Krishna taking care really like the way you'd like it? Okay, so that's your answer. It's all connected. Because there's a principle of respect of authority. Authority is one principle. So Krishna is the authority. He comes to us as all these other persons. So there is the parents as individuals who are free to do as they please. But they are also representing a potency of the Lord, which are authorities for us. Right? Means they are the ones that give the beginning, what do you call it? The beginning, principles of, direction, and what's proper to do, what's not proper to do, you know, and they're supposed to take care of us, nourish us, all that. So any of that that they are doing, even if they're not doing so well, just what they're doing, that potency is coming from Krishna. Maybe those particular souls are not good mediums for this potency of the Lord to come through. But that potency is there. If they nourished us at all, or they directed us at all, then that is how much only that they could be mediums, or, you know, the via media for that potency of the Lord. So that we must respect. Maybe them as individuals, they did not do such a good job as individual conditioned souls. But the principle of authority, we can't. Otherwise, then we'll just see faults there. So then we'll see faults in the temple president, we'll see faults in the husband, see faults in the guru, see faults in the GBC, see faults in... anybody who's in a position of authority will just see the faults in that they didn't quite do their job right. Right? Because we're doing that because who's the first guru? Right? It's mother. And then who's the next guru?
Father.
And then after that, then depending upon the situation, then teachers, and then the whole thing unfolds. So the whole concept of parampara then opens up from that. So if we reject that, if we reject the bottom, then you can't have the whole thing. Right? If you're standing on the ground floor, and then, you know, you get rid of the, you know, first two flights of stairs, how are you going to get to the third floor? Right? So it's not that those persons are our connection. You understand? It's not that those two souls are our connection. But it's the principle that those souls are working within as parents and us as their child that has to be worked. That has to remain intact. Just like you see Prahlad Maharaj, I don't think he was overly impressed with his father as a great Vaishnav, you know, example. So, but we see as a father, he as a son never dealt with him improperly. He always respected and all these things like that. But he didn't necessarily appreciate his father's activities. But, you know, that's his individual choice. And he's made his choice. But he never broke the etiquette on how to deal. That's the thing. So is that, you know, whatever, the etiquette is there, how to deal. So with that etiquette is always done. And they've done something for us, even if nothing else. You know, means we're in the material world, then if we're going to perform any activity, you have to have a body. So at least they arrange for the body, if nothing else. And, you know, in those, if they did, can't say, but, you know, them or somebody, they had to take care of the body at least for a few years, you know, and make arrangements for it. Otherwise, you know, at least to the age where you can take care of yourself. You know, so at least you got to get to at least 5-6 years old, if not, you know, 12-13. You know, then maybe you could venture off on your own. You know, and Narad Muni was 6, I think, when he left and went off on his own. You know, it's not uncommon that you hear of that. It's a little early, but whatever. But at least those first 5 years, they have to get us through. You know, so that endeavor it's a lot of trouble. You know, taking care of a kid is not an easy job. So that 5 years is a lot of work. Maybe they didn't do it so great, but at least something was done. Right? So then, you know, we just appreciate that principle. And then leave it at that. Then we can appreciate, okay, the temple president's doing this much, the guru's doing this much, husband's doing this much, or other friends are doing this much. And otherwise, then we're going to find the same fault in all the authorities. From top to bottom. You know? So that's why we have to look at the positive side and forget the other side. Right? Because if we're expecting everything to be perfect, that's fine. But now if we look at the law of karma, you only get what results from what you've done. So why did we get parents like that? Right? Because we were the most wonderful, pious persons, perfectly took care of our children in all past lives, and took care of everything so wonderfully, and so in this life then we get parents that aren't very qualified. Something like that? Or we were bad parents, and so now in this life, you know, however they were bad is how we were bad. They had their own agendas, they were busy, we were just a burden, we were just an accident, you know, or whatever it was. But that's what we did before, so that's what we got. So ultimately it comes back to us, and that's the problem. The natural conditioned nature is it's always someone else's fault. But nothing's anyone else's fault. We're getting exactly what we deserve. Not one, you know, atom more or less. You may say, I don't deserve this. Yes, justice-wise, if you look at it from in the temporary small scope of this lifetime, you can say, yes, you don't deserve it. But the point is the soul is, you know, lasts a little longer than this life. It didn't appear at the birth of this body and won't disappear at the end of this. It means if you step back from the picture, you can see, oh, I did all this nonsense, therefore I'm getting this here. And as a devotee, it should have been so much more, and Krishna's reduced it down to just this. So I'm actually doing pretty good. Like that. But then that takes humility. And then it means we have to become tolerant. So humbleness and tolerance are not, you know, real good means, how you say? The modern thing is, you know, who's the victim doesn't have to be humble and tolerant. They can be as unforgiving and angry and violent as they like. And that's just natural, it's purification for them, right? So, you know, then it doesn't really nurture, it's not a good foundation for developing the proper Vaishnava qualities. Right? And then everybody else, they should be, you know, anybody who's not a victim should be very, you know, tolerant and everything of this victim's behaving as bad or worse than the persons who gave them trouble. Right? Their parents gave them trouble, they felt they're victims, so now they're so nasty and bitter and this and that and yelling and screaming and being just as bad, if not worse, than their parents. And everybody else should be very nice and tolerant. But the person himself isn't. But the whole point is everybody should be becoming tolerant and humble. So everybody should care for the person, but the person themselves should be thinking, yes, it's you know, just, you know, it's what I deserve. Then you put that together, you have a very nice society. You know? But if one person isn't supposed to be nasty, why is it that another can be nasty and it's perfectly fine? If nastiness is not good, it means nobody should be nasty. So then it's a whole different concept, because it's based on the eternal principle. But, does that make some sense? Anything else on this? No. No. Okay. If one asks, what are the duties of the Vaishnavas? Then I answer, the Vaishnavas' duties are the eternal duties of the soul. When he is liberated from the world of matter, the Vaishnava soul attains his pure spiritual body. And with that body, he engages in devotional activities that express his spiritual love for Lord Krishna. When he resides in the material world, a person who is intelligent respectfully accepts all that advances his spiritual life and rejects all that hinders it. He does not blindly follow the orders He does not blindly follow the orders and prohibitions of the scriptures. When the scriptures encourage devotion to Lord Hari, then such a person happily accepts those teachings. When the scriptures' teachings do not encourage devotion, he does not honor those teachings. In the same way, a Vaishnava also honors or rejects the prohibitions taught in the scriptures. A Vaishnava is the best person in the world. A Vaishnava is the friend of everyone in the world. Problem. How you say? Just the English pronunciation, grammatical pronunciation of this is always an annoyance. Because a Vaishnava means not Vaishnava. But in English it means someone who is a Vaishnava. So therefore the Bhavishya Purana says that the Malecha language is the, you know, the opposite or the antithesis of the Sanskrit language, you know, and it's basically offense to language, but the Malechas are very proud of their language. So.
Just go with the word.
Yeah, yeah. It's complete opposite. Everything is backwards. But whatever. Yeah, yeah. A Vaishnava. But still, a Vaishnava is like it's closer. It means it's a little less. But we'll try it. A Vaishnava is the auspiciousness of the world. In this way, I have humbly said all I wish to say to the assembly of Vaishnavas. May the Vaishnavas wash away all my faults and mistakes. Okay, so he's pointing out, then therefore the devotees, he accepts that which advances spiritual life, and which doesn't, he rejects. But this is not his own idea, this is coming from the Acharyas. So that is the point. Is that the Acharyas, they give the directions, and then from there, then these things are accepted and rejected. So it's not rejected because the principle is wrong, it's the detail is wrong. The principle that we want is not obtained by it. Let's say the principle is that of elevation, but the detail is only elevation to the heavenly planets. So that's rejected. Or the principle is elevation, but the detail only gets one to the Brahman. So that's rejected. Right? Like that. It's because the details don't actually give what you want. Like that. And then we have another way, another detail, how we get it done. Like that. After speaking these words, Vaishnava Das offered Dandavat obeisances to the Vaishnava assembly and then sat down to one side. The Vaishnava's eyes were filled with tears. With one voice, the Vaishnava called out, "Well done, well done." The four directions of Godrum Forest echoed with, "Well done, well done." That's sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, sadhu, sadhu. The Brahmana singer, who had first asked the question, could see deep truth in many of the speaker's arguments. Although he still had some doubts, the seed of faith in the Vaishnava religion had been firmly planted in his mind. With folded hands, he said, "O great souls, I was not a Vaishnava. Again and again, hearing Lord Hari's holy names, I have now become a Vaishnava. If you are merciful and teach me a little more, all my doubts will go far away." Then Sri Prem Das, the saintly Paramahamsa Babaji, mercifully said, "Stay with Sriman Vaishnava Das. He is learned in all the scriptures. At Varanasi, he deeply studied Vedanta Sutra and accepted sannyas. By the limitless mercy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is the Lord of our lives, he was attracted to Sri Navadvip. He knows all the truths of the Vaishnava religion. Deep love for Lord Hari's holy names has taken its birth within him." The questioner was a pious man named Sri Kalidas Lahiri. Hearing the saintly Babaji's words, in his heart he accepted Vaishnav Das as his spiritual master. In his mind he thought, this person was born in a Brahmana family, and he accepted sannyas. Therefore he is fit to teach a Brahmana. Also, I see that he has deeply entered the truths of Vaishnava religion. From him I will learn much about the Vaishnava religion. Thinking in this way, Lahiri Mahashai offered dandavat obeisances at Sri Vaishnav Das's feet and said, O great soul, please be merciful to me. Offering dandavat obeisances to him, Vaishnava Das replied, if you are merciful to me, then I have it. Offering dandavat obeisances to him, Vaishnav Das replied, if you are merciful to me, then I have attained my wish. With sunset approaching, everyone returned to their own places. Lahiri Mahashai's home was in a secluded part of the village. It was in a grove. In the middle was a cottage of Madhavi vines and a platform for Tulsi Devi. There were two rooms, one on each side. The yard was hedged with chita bushes, with the bail tree, neem tree, and some other trees bearing fruits and flowers. The place was charming. The proprietor of that grove was named Madhava Das Babaji. At first the Babaji had been a good soul, but by bad association he had fallen away from the Vaishnava religion. Because of improper association with a woman, his devotional practices were now dwarfed. Pushed by poverty, he could not live happily. He begged in many places and rented out one of his rooms. Lahiri Mahashai was now staying in that room. In the middle of the night, Lahiri Mahashai's sleep was broken. Again and again he thought of what Vaishnav Das Babaji had said. Then he heard a sound in the courtyard. Coming outside in the courtyard, he saw Madhav Das talking with the woman. Seeing him, the woman disappeared. Embarrassed before Lahiri Mahashai, Madhava Das stood motionless. Lahiri Mahashai said, Babaji, what's wrong? Tears in his eyes, Madhav Das replied, oh my misfortune, what more can I say? What was I in the past? What am I now? How much faith the saintly Paramahamsa Babaji had in me? Now I am ashamed even to come near him. Lahiri Mahashai said, if you tell me clearly, I can understand. Madhava Das said, the woman you saw was my married wife in my former ashram. A few days after I accepted a life of renunciation, she came to Sri Shantipur and lived in a cottage she built by the Ganga shore. Many days passed in that way. Walking by the Ganga shore at Sri Shantipur, I saw her and said, why did you leave your home? She told me, material life is not good. Now that I am robbed of your feet, I will stay at a holy place and beg alms. Not saying anything more, I slowly returned to Sri Godruma. At Sri Godruma, I eventually stayed at a Sadgopa's house. Every day at some place or other, I would see her. The more I tried to avoid her, the more she tried to come near me. Now she stays at an ashram. She comes late at night and tries to ruin me. Now I am infamous everywhere, because I now associate with her. My devotional service has become dwarfed. I am a cinder that blackens the family of Sri Krishna Chaitanya's servants. Since the time of Chota Haridas's punishment, I am the most deserving of punishment. Being merciful, the Babajis of Sri Godruma have not yet punished me, but they do not trust me. Hearing these words, Lahiri Mahashai said, take care, O Madhava Das Babaji. After speaking these words, he entered the house. The Babaji sat on his own seat. Lahiri Mahashai could not sleep. Again and again he thought, Madhava Das Babaji has fallen down. He is like one who eats his own vomit. I should not stay in this house. Why not? Even if I do not fall down by associating with him, I will be criticized by others. Not trusting me, the pure Vaishnavas will not teach me. At sunrise, he went to Prajumna Kunj, properly greeted Sri Vaishnava Das, and asked for a place to stay. When Vaishnava Das informed the saintly Paramahamsa Babaji of the request, the Babaji said he could stay in a cottage on one side of the forest. Lahiri Mahashai stayed in that cottage and arranged to get prasadam at the home of a nearby Brahmin. That ends chapter 4. That ends chapter 3. Any questions on this or anything else?
When I was doing Bhakti Shastri with Vidya Gauranga Prabhu.
When I was learning
Bhakti Shastri with Vidvan Gauranga Prabhu, he once pointed out on the Shastras, there are many kinds of Shastras and they give many kinds of instructions. And then we asked once, which Shastra is good? And he says, there is no such a question which one is good. All of them are good for somebody.
Hmm.
And then that's why he says, by chanting the Gayatri, for Brahmana is good, but for one who is Vaishnava, he needs something else. For somebody who is a meat eater, he must eat something which is offered to some demigod, because Vishnu will not take anyway. So then they can eat Durga's remnants or ghost or something. And then, but someone who is not a meat eater, then they shouldn't eat. It's maybe good for some person, but it's not good for her Brahmanas. So the same way Vaishnavas also have higher principles.
Mm. Yeah, good. Yeah, nice. So chapter 4.
Just one thing.
Huh.
That when he leaves the association of Madhava, Mamaji, the instruction of that for us is within a situation is according to an eye, that we pay respect from a distance. Here he is rejecting that association.
Yeah, means the association is given up.
Mm-hmm.
Means that's always the principle. Means if association's not, see, it's just, the point is he was good before,
mm-hmm.
and then now he's not. Mm-hmm. So one has to take something of what it is now. So if it's not good now, then there's no association. May have been good in the past, but it doesn't mean it's good now. Like yesterday, the fruit may have been good, but today it's not. So we can't say, well, yesterday it was good, because today it's not. So, but the point is because the soul is eternal, and the soul is by nature servant of Krishna, at any time, that particular individual living entity can again take up proper, they can properly situate themselves. Therefore, if they do that, then there's no problem. But while they're in a position that's not good, then that's to be that association is to be avoided.
That means that we have to be careful to avoid rigidity in how we see things. That means we have to be careful to avoid rigidity in how we see things.
Yeah, like that. And there must be that broad-mindedness that the whole, because it's not, how you say. There's no such thing as eternal damnation, because the material world, damnation is material, and material is never eternal. So there's no such thing. And then one can say for this lifetime, okay, but what's so special about this lifetime? You know, why is it next life it'll be different? Because it's the desire that goes with them, right? And results of their activities will also go with them. But the point is it itself is the desire. So if you change the desire, then the whole thing is changed. You know, a person is doing an activity, then when they become a servant of Krishna, then everything changes. Even though the activities may appear to be still the same, they may still be the same.
I just found it interesting that this Babaji. It sounded like there was some repentance in the way.
Yeah, no, he is.
But then there's no attempt to assist him or anything?
Well, he probably is not also making the attempt himself. He sees it's wrong, he feels bad about it, but he's not actually doing anything about it. You know, that's the thing. You know, the others are already doing something. They don't trust him, so therefore they're not getting too intimate. So that's already something. That's already some punishment. And by that, then he is feeling, has these feelings. But otherwise, he wasn't repentant 2 minutes before when Lahiri Mahashai was inside the room. It's when he's walking out, you know, and then the lady goes away, and then, you know, then he's feeling bad. You know?
It's a subtle sort of instruction for us in terms of how...
Yeah. No, all these things are being made to show that the association and all that, these things are important. They must be given up. It means if that repentance is there, he gives up this improper activity. You know? And then tries to, you know, put himself for you know, correction and further training at the feet of the Vaishnavas. Then there's some, you know, something to be worked with. Still, they're probably, the devotees would be a little wary until they see that steadiness is there. You know, that the problem is, you know, for a sufficient amount of time, is there to make steady. But you can't expect everything to be always perfect, because until one attains to the platform of prema, there's always a chance of falling away like that. So it's not that, well, if they were advanced, they wouldn't fall. No, it means advanced that they wouldn't fall means prema. Anything lower than that, which is still within the Uttamadhikari platform, they can still fall from. Like that. So the point is prema is the actual safe position. But before that, then it's either, you know, in the neutral or the negative. And it means we're either conditioned or we're liberated, but liberated still doesn't mean that we've made our choice. Because liberated state is the tatastha position. You know, jiva in the liberated state is still acting as tatastha, because they're not in the material, but they're not in the spiritual. They have that choice. Right? So they still have to. So prema means that choice has fully been made. Then one doesn't come back into this material world. So therefore, one should not be overly critical of the Vaishnavas, you know. Oh, he was senior devotee, how can he fall down? Well, I mean, until Bharat Maharaj fell down, so I mean, why can't the local temple president or someone else fall down? You know, Bharat Maharaj, somehow or another, they put it in the Bhagavatam, you know, like that, but you know, this person you're not going to, you know, can't give the time of day to. So it's, one has to see. If they're in a fallen condition, they're behaving badly, of course, to be avoided. But if that's given up, then what's the problem? At the same time is, then the person themselves should try to maintain a humble platform. Otherwise they may become proud and again have the same problem. You know, if they are accepted by the Vaishnavas, they still have to be careful. That makes sense.
Proud, meaning that because that propensity is still there, the pride will bring that out again?
Yeah, that's there. Or just, even if it's not, means the material propensity of enjoyment is there. So it may come out in a different way. But the point is until one completely purifies the heart, there's always danger of falling down. Therefore, if we're always meek and humble, you know, and always dependent upon Krishna, you know, follow these symptoms of surrender, then, you know, Krishna can protect us. If we're proud means then we're proud of our own abilities, and that means to that degree we're proud, to that degree we're on our own. You know, then it's we're saying that I can do this. We're not recognizing, no, it's Krishna who's doing this. So then that pride may get us into trouble, because pride has a tendency to grow. You know, and until after a while we think we can do everything. And then it's yes, okay, go for it. So it's very, very, one has to be very, very careful. That's why that so much emphasis is put on that verse, Trinada Pisumi Trinada, is that one must be, you know, meek and humble, you know, and respect others. Have all respect for others, expect none for yourself. Then you can chant all the time. So these things are difficult, especially when they become clouded by the cause of justice, material justice. Then it's like, I've been wronged. Yes, okay, we've been wronged, but I mean, who did you wrong in previous lives? No, but I'm not wronging now, now I'm a devotee. Okay, great. So, do you want justice, or do you want to go back to Godhead? You know? So, which is higher, going back to Godhead, or, you know, fighting for the cause of justice?
Isn't that
pranamaya? It's pranamaya. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, but we don't want this to happen to any other devotee. Great. But now what's the method you're going to go about it? You're going to use the method that you are fighting against to get it? Right? Mm-hmm. People are behaving badly, so therefore you'll behave badly to correct it. It doesn't really work like that. You know? One has to act according to religious principles to correct it. And the most important religious principle is Krishna consciousness. So one has to deal with it with maturity. But that means realization, that means faith, that means commitment, you know, to the devotional process. So that means we have to put out ourselves. Well, the other one, we don't. It's cheap. I can get justice today, no matter if I'm qualified or not. You know, not that the culture shouldn't be in place, but we have to understand, you know, what are the different levels of that culture. And if you're endeavoring for a higher level, then the lower will come. But you have to actually know what those levels are. You have to know what you're endeavoring for. Right? Right? We say, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for all this. Okay, if we don't care for all this, it means we don't care for justice either. If we care for justice, then along with justice, then there's so many technical rules. Now, what are those technical rules? Right? It means good and bad didn't come from, you know, the contemporary culture. Good and bad is established by God. So therefore, what does God have to say about these activities?
That would blow their mind.
Hmm?
That would blow their mind.
Yeah, but that's the problem. Is then it puts us back in the position of you know, being subservient. You know, so that's the whole difficulty. So that's the thing, is we just have to choose what we want. The choice is ours. That's the thing. If we want justice, then we have to wait around to get it. And if we've used unjust means to get our justice, that means in the future it'll go the other way. You know, like our, that, you know, how you say? That well, not very, how you say, very well thought out. There's that painting where you have the cow with the human head and then the human with the cow's head, you know. That's justice. That painting is justice. That is material justice. That's it. You want it, you got to wait around for it. Maybe you get it now, but how did you get your justice? So if there was anything unjust about how you got your justice, you may say the means justifies the ends. That's all right. That's us saying, but what does God have to say about it? He's running the show, not us. So now if there was anything unjust in how we got our justice, then the other person, that same soul, is going to get the opportunity to get back on us. That, and then we're going to say again, I was unjustly dealt with. And it just keeps going on and on and on and on and on, birth after birth after birth after birth, right? The human kills the cow, then the next life, the cow's a human, the human is the cow, right? Then he has the opportunity to kill that human who's now in the cow body. If he does it, he's got justice. But now because he's killed the cow, now that living entity who's the cow, who was the human before, will become the human and they'll become the cow. And if they take advantage of that, then again, it'll just go on unlimitedly. Until one day, the human, who was the cow, then, you know, whatever, we could go on, who was the human, who was the cow, whatever. Then if they decide, what am I doing? This is nonsense. You can't kill these cows. Then it stops. But then justice wasn't obtained. Right? Means, so that's the whole thing. That there is no solution in this material world. The only way is to get out. That's it. And so that means at one point we must detach ourselves and not care and turn our back on it. That's it. It's not that you'll wrap everything up and get everything perfect and all that, and when everything's just like, you know, picture perfect, then I will just, in a very wonderful way, after saying goodbye to everybody and, you know, having a big party, then I'll walk off and, you know, into the sunset and go back to Godhead. Right? It won't work like that. It's just one day you just got to turn around and walk out on it, finished. That's it. And not look back. Otherwise, then just we look a little bit, Maya will get us there. That's the thing. We have to remember that principle. Right? Right? How does, you know, the boy and girl, how do they catch each other's attention? By a straight glance or out of the corner of the eye? So that's the way it is. You just turn with a little glance at Maya and that's it. So one has to just leave it. That's the thing. There's no nice way of saying goodbye. Like that. That's the problem. You know, we want it to be a nice way, but it doesn't exist. That's why Krishna uses the analogy of the sword. That's it. It's just you have to cut it off. That's it. Finished. You know? Anything else? Yes.
She said that pain means one's made the full choice. So can one not make the full choice possibly before getting to pain?
Means that commitment is there, and basically if one has that determination, the normal thing is one will just go straight through. But the point is the possibility is that one could fall at any point up to there. Could. So therefore, one must keep up one's guard. Because even you take a thing like the gopis, right, that didn't get to go to the rasa dance because their attention was not fully on Krishna. They got diverted by all the wonderful, nice facilities that were there, you know, living in the spiritual world. You know, they have a nice house, a nice family, and nice, you know, facilities, and nice relationships, and so to that degree they forgot about Krishna. Right? So they got distracted. So by Krishna's grace, generally once one gets to that platform, Krishna's not going to let one get away. Right? But the point is one should never be, one has to be careful of that pride and all these other things. Otherwise the gopis that then did make it there, still because of their transcendental pride that wasn't pure, then therefore, or not transcendental pride, pride in the transcendental, therefore they still didn't get Krishna. Krishna went away. You know, so it's serious business. But basically speaking, the normal thing is once it should. Once you basically get to taste ruchi, then the chance of falling would start to get very slim. You know, like that. Before that will be more. But the point is just that one has to be careful. Otherwise the tendency is to become proud. Yes, I'm, you know, big and advanced and this and that. But the whole point is one has to be humble all the way through. Then it will work. Like that. Then it will work. But the idea is we should never become proud and take it cheaply. Like that.
How do you avoid spiritual apathies?
Spiritual?
About pride, then you've got these apathies that are, I'm using spiritual like this. Mm. Like being guru, being someone else, being advanced.
One has to understand, as we've explained before, is that these are only connected with the conditioned nature. They're not otherwise like that. Even being guru is all those rituals of guru, this and that. That's what we're proud of. Mm-hmm. You know, relationship itself we're not proud of. You know, the actual exchange between the two persons, that we're not proud of. We're proud of the externals that go with that. You know, the respect, the obeisances, any of these kind of things. That's what we're proud of. So the actual essence of that, we're not. And the point is we're not the one anywhere. We're just the biomedia. You know, it's like the tap being very proud of its ability to produce water. Right? But it doesn't produce any water. Like that. So that mercy is coming down from Krishna. Right? But, because the principles, we follow in the footsteps of the devotees, and we serve the devotees, therefore Krishna's mercy follows the mercy of the devotees. When the devotees are kind, like that, then Krishna shows his kindness upon that person. Right? That's why we approach devotees. We can approach Krishna directly, but his mercy, and we beg Krishna for mercy, so what will his mercy be? It will come in the form of the devotees. Right? Because directly he's not going to deal with us. Right? Because neither us or him will get the most pleasure out of it. The most pleasure is out of serving the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. We'll be the happiest and he'll be the happiest. So therefore directly he's not going to deal so much. So he's going to make arrangements that then we're with the devotees by which we can then come to him. Right? He doesn't give himself, the devotees give him. Because he's given himself to the devotees. So how can he give himself? If Krishna has given himself to his devotees, how can he give himself to us? So if we pray, we want Krishna, therefore what he can do is put us in contact with those devotees that have him. They can give Krishna to us. Like that. Because he's already given himself away to the devotees. So he doesn't have himself to give. Like that. So like that then that is his mercy to give to devotees. That makes sense? Anything else?
Maharaj, you mentioned that there is no eternal damnation.
Mm.
And I just happened to translate a commentary on the fifth canto by a saint in Madhva's line, Saint Bandi Padiraj, for a devotee. And he mentions that he's discussing the planets of the universe, and he discusses that there are souls who are burning eternally in hell, enduring unspeakable sufferings, Kali's of different ages and their followers, and that they are suffering there eternally, and this suffering for them is happiness. And it just struck me as very frightening, this thing. And also some years ago I read a Danda article, I think, by Sutra Maharaj, Danda answer, that there are jivas who I should be happy, and they are reduced to a sukshma jiva existence. I didn't know at that time what it exactly meant, but it seemed to me that it's a reduced existence totally inactive because they simply can make a decision to be Krishnas or to serve Krishna, can final decision or full decision. Can the jiva make a full decision not to serve forever?
No, because the nature of the soul is to serve. That's our nature. So this is a temporary situation. Even you say they're eternally suffering in hell, what happens when Mahavishnu breathes in? There is no hell. So they're not suffering then. So you can understand the eternal is just meaning it's so long, no one knows when it'll end.
That's how Prabhupada translated it. Nalakiniyatam vasa is for a very long time, as you said.
Yeah, means because if you take us and say, you know, it's just, it's so long, how would you imagine it? You know, so it's just, you know, that we've been in the material world so long, who can count? But even you say we're here, we've been here eternally, but are we in the material world when Mahavishnu breathes in? There is no material world. So at those times we're not. We've merged into the Lord's body. We're liberated like the yogis are trying to attain. Right? It means without any endeavor, Mahavishnu breathes in and every living entity gets the liberation of merging into his body. What the yogis, Astanga yogis, try very hard to get. Right? And then after that, then he glances and then they go into the pradhan. Right? And then by them being there in the time, it turns into, you know, Mahatattva. That's Vasudeva Sattva. So they're in the liberated condition that the impersonalists are endeavoring for. Right? And then after all the elements are created, and then Brahma's created, and then everything, the secondary creation, then they're put into the world, and then they start karma. Right? So that means, you know, every time he breathes in and out, then the living entity goes through all these phases of the perfection of karma, perfection of jnana, and perfection of yoga. Right? The voidism, the impersonal, you know, merging, and the enjoyments of the material activities, the fruits of that. And it's always going on. You know, so therefore you can't call any of these eternal. Right? When he breathes in, that's as long as the breathing out. So how long you're in the material world, that long you're out of it. Right? So it's just called that because it's so long. Therefore, these terms, that's what he's describing here. Therefore, these words are talking, they say, but nitya can't mean, nitya has to refer to the spiritual realm. Right? Like you see some of these really, really heavy hells, like Creamy Bojan. It's 100,000 miles wide, and you'll live in it for as long as it's miles wide. Right? 1 year for every, so 100,000 years. It's like one of the longest of all of them. But compared to Lord Brahma's lifetime, 100,000 years is nothing. Right? So then, you know, if somebody's racked up a good amount of sinful activities, they could be a long time.
Even in those places, there are creatures that go there,
Narada and Bhavatam. So these, like that. So that's how one should understand these things. Okay? Anything else? Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samavitā Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jāna Chaitanya Gaura Prema.